Greetings and welcome to the Operational Arch, the official podcast of the School of Advanced Military Studies, dedicated to bridging the gap between tactics and strategy through the study of operational art and the operational level of war. I'm Major Kelsey Kurtz, here along Major Josh Bedingfield, and will be your host today. Our guests joining us on this episode are the Director of the School of Advanced Military Studies, Colonel Andy Morgado, and the Director of the Advanced Military Studies Program, Dr. Bruce Stanley. Colonel Morgado has served as an armor officer for 29 years and has commanded at every level through the brigade. He deployed 3 times to Iraq and 4 times to Korea. He holds 3 master's degrees from Norwich University, the U.S. Army Command and General Staff College, and the School of Advanced Military Studies. Dr. Bruce Stanley has served at SAMS for going on 14 years. Throughout his 24-year military career as an infantry officer, he had numerous operational deployments, including the 2001 invasion of Afghanistan with 10th Mountain that occurred during his SAMS utilization tour. He holds a PhD from Kansas State University in Security Studies, 3 master's degrees from the University of Central Michigan, the Command and General Staff College, and the School of Advanced Military Studies, and is the author of a book, Outsourcing Security, Private Military Contractors, and Foreign Policy. This is our 4th and final episode in our limited series on the pillar of operational art. Today we are going to talk about practice and how it connects with and leverages the other pillars, as well as SAMS's role in building practitioners of operational art. To recap, Dr. No explained how history provides context and transmits wisdom. Dr. Gorman discussed how theory helps us make sense of complicated things and understand the world. And I think he set a record for going over 30 minutes without mentioning Boyd as a retired Air Force officer. And Mr. Cree described how doctrine provides a common language and retains the wisdom of the force. Gentlemen, welcome to the show today.
Thanks, Kelsey. Great to be here.
Hey, thank you.
So for those who have listened to previous episodes and tapped into our limited series, they'll notice a slight deviation in today's episode. Generally, we begin with the question, what is operational art? And past guests really haven't deviated beyond that doctrinal definition of it. So we'd like to open it up instead with a conversation about the relationship or tension between a doctrinal grasp of operational art and a personal theory of operational art.
Right. Well, I guess I'll take that one. Yeah, Colonel Morgado's looking at me. So I think you capture the start there pretty good, because you said, what is the tension? And I think the tension lies with, when you think about doctrine tells you what to do, and it gives you a few tools of maybe for analysis or evaluation or how to do an assessment, but it doesn't really tell you how to do it. So this difference between what to do and how to do it is really how you internalize what your previous guests have talked about, whether it be theory, whether it be history, or whether it be doctrine. So with acknowledging that you're not going to go fight large-scale combat operations over and over again because those are rare events that occur, so how do you approach it? And so this business of taking a theoretical look and then applying that to some historical examples that may be out there, and then bouncing those off of against what doctrine says, really gets you to the point where you can start developing a personal theory of operational art, or at least a better understanding, or maybe a deeper understanding would be a better way to state that. So I would say it doesn't happen in a day. It probably doesn't happen in the 10 and a half months that you're here. That's why there's a utilization tour. And then it's really this business of a lifelong study. And so a deeper understanding comes with not just looking at historical examples or reading the latest doctrine or going to a deep dive on theory. It's really bringing all of those together. And I don't think it's a static piece. Your personal theory may evolve over time as you gain more observations, more understanding, or more practice as you do it. Sir, what do you think?
I agree with everything you said. But I think I'd take a simpler track. I am an armor officer, so I got to break things down Barney style. I think really it's the tension between science and art. We can certainly, drive certain principles home and review theory, history, and doctrine, and get it into a very deep understanding of all those things. But to go back to doctrine and operational art, it says that operational art is the application of skill and knowledge, experience, creativity, and judgment. All those things, for lack of a better term, are squishy, right? They're fuzzy. And, you know, so everyone has a different way of applying those things. So you can be a doctrinal master, you can be, you know, deeply steeped in history, but, you know, how you perceive a problem and then how you marshal your individual skills to solve a problem are all very unique. So how do we do that? And so that's what we see play out, you know, every day in our classrooms. Are really smart people that know a lot about a lot of different things, but then you put them in charge of an OPT and say, okay, solve problem X, and they're like, I don't know where to begin. Well, that's where we come in, right? We help you come to grips with that, how to get an initial start, what to do when someone hands you a blank sheet of paper, and then you got to produce a masterpiece. So all that is about the application of our principles here.
Yep, sir, and you have a really unique perspective. This is your third time through this institution, first as a student, then as an instructor, and now as the military lead. This gives you a unique perspective for learning in and as well as after action. How have you seen your application and thoughts on operational art evolve through your multiple turns in this institution?
Yeah, it really has. That's a great question. I think as I reflect upon my AMSP time, I laugh of how clueless I was 1 year as a student, and Dr. Bob Epstein and probably Dr. Abbs could probably attest to my my struggles as a student. I will say, you know, we were very narrowly focused when I was here at AMSP. You know, our problem that we were asked to grapple with every day involved counterinsurgency and what that meant and irregular warfare. So we read a lot of Caldwell. We read you know, Seven Pillars. We read all that and pretty deeply, you know. And as I reflect on it now, it really gave me a kind of a narrow view of certain problems to solve and how to apply it. You know, then I came back at ASLSP where, you know, we had just, you know, transitioned out of Iraq. We were trying to wrap things up in Afghanistan. And we're like, wow, it's a wild, new, wacky world out there. And how do we come to grips with uncertainty? But then as I reflected back, well, AMSP helped me, you know, deal with uncertainty. You know, we just, you know, decided to go deep on a certain topic because we needed to, because that's what we needed up front. But it also gave us the skills to think more broadly. And we continue to do that. And I see that today. Now, you know, 7 years after that, you know, we're still thinking about the current, but we always have our mind on the future and those things that are enduring within warfare that we have to consider. So I guess I don't know if I answered your question, but I've seen both continuity and change. But I think overall continuity in the way that, you know, we need to take the problem at hand, dissect it, and help our students understand and how to deal with that.
Dr. Stanley, if that was a comps question, how would you grade Colonel Mercado?
He would probably get a go. Maybe. Now, these are all good, because that's a comp question, right? Because how do you take this and internalize it, right? That's the tough piece, because, you know, we hand you, you know, a stack of books, we pass out a whole bunch of articles, and we look at a lot of campaigns, and we remind you that, oh yes, we want you to speak in doctrinal language. And it's not just as I mentioned earlier, it's not just a one-stop shop, right? It doesn't end at the 10 and a half, 11 month mark. It's how do you continue to evolve? And sometimes it's, do I go back and do I reread something? And when I reread one of the books that or articles or review a campaign, you will see something different because your life experience has been different. Your knowledge that you've gained has been different. You know, as you've been out in the operational force, you see things, right? You say, oh, well, I saw that in this different context. And then it makes a little bit more sense. So your understanding becomes not just deeper, but more nuanced, I think. And maybe that gets back to this business. It's easy to go to the doctrine and do the doctrinal definition first, but how much knowledge do you need? How much experience do you need? When you look at the elements of operational arch, how much depth? What do we mean by agility? How much agility do I need to have? Is culmination really a bad thing? And so you question some of the peer definitions in a different way, I think, with more experience over time to really get that deeper understanding.
Would you say that that experience plays out in such a way. It's like taking an abstract concept of art, something that is vague and it's amorphous, and then with that experience, you can kind of scientifically frame it, right? So the tension of the art being engaging something that is unknown, and then with experience and knowledge, we're kind of able to do what Army Doctrine does, which is take nebulous concepts and then apply the science of warfare so that the next time you engage it, you're like, oh, I've experienced this before, and I can take that new foundation that I built on that experience and then build on it.
Yeah, I think so. But what you don't want to do is replicate, right? You don't want to just take the PowerPoint slide from the last briefing and just redo that again. It's really having that knowledge that you have to take that step back, right? That every problem that you're going to be faced with is new. And though you may use some of the tools, you may use them in a different way or in a different sequence, or you might find that there's no good tool, that you have to actually back way up and create a new tool or new rule set to take a look at the problem that you're faced with. And I think that's the recognition that you have, or at some point that does click on, that you have to be able to do that.
Sure. Yeah, I guess just to add on that, you know, experience is a funny thing, right? Time needs to go by, right, for you to gain, experience. And so you have to think about when, SAMS occurs or AMSP occurs within, the life cycle, of an officer. It's after you've completed your company grade time and developed yourself as an expert, within your branch. But that, if you just take that experience itself, it's limited, right? Because it's through a certain lens of your branch, and then through your operational experiences, you pick up and learn things. So what we try to do here at SAMS is how do we quickly expand your experience base, right? So that's where history comes in, right? If we can't learn lessons that we've lived, we have to learn it from others or do it vicariously, and so that's what history does. Theory expands on it because we look at other people's perspectives on here's their theory on how the world's supposed to work or how we're supposed to solve problems. And this accumulation of theory then gives us, other perspectives. It gives us, more experience. And certainly doctrine is accumulated experience. It's things that, over time, our army, our nation, has learned and incorporated and saying, here's how we fight wars. So all those things contribute to experience. And all we're doing is preparing you for your next experience. You're about to go, as a division or corps planner, sit at the table with, the senior commander of that organization, and he or she from day one is going to ask you about X and, what you think about X, or provide your analysis on the following. And all you have to go on is your own personal experience and those things that, you've learned about the experiences of others vicariously through us. So, yeah, experience has got a big deal in how we apply things. And we understand that, you have X amount in your rucksack, and we're going to add to that while you're here.
That kind of bridges over to the concept that we're talking about today, which is practice. So you're talking, sir, about experience being driven by the other pillars, just theory, doctrine, and history. Where does practice come into that relationship? And are we talking about practice when we say experience?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we do several things here in this school to get after practice. We have six exercises across the academic year, and that is our prime time, gain experience or get practice at this thing of applying operational art. But we just can't rely on just those six events. I mean, they're a pretty big deal in terms of resources and what we expect you to accomplish. But that's not it, all right? There's other secret ingredients in our sauce, right? Even on the weekly structure of our class, there in each individual class, you have readings, you discuss it, you have professional debate, and then we want you to synthesize, right? So get up on the whiteboards and do the following. I mean, all that is application. You are taking abstract concepts, and applying it. But we also get at application experience in other ways. I mean, looking at the makeup of a seminar, it is joint, it is interagency, it is international, it is multi-component. So all those people that are sitting in the room with you are contributing through their experience and how they've applied certain things in their backgrounds and constructs to help you in your education. Look at who leads the seminar. It's a seminar leader. It's a former battalion commander who has he or she has had broad experiences within the Army and leading large organizations, and they're imparting that skill. It is co-chaired by an academic, a PhD, that has gone a pretty long and sometimes tortuous road, to earning a degree in a very, specialized area of knowledge and all the experience that they've gained from that. So you add up all those things, and it's all sorts of application going on every day. And that is absolutely fundamental. It is baseline to our absolute success and what we're trying to do. And unless we get those multiple repetitions, we're wasting opportunities. So each and every day we're getting multiple reps in not only theory, history, and doctrine, but how are you applying it? And to say it perhaps in this way, I mean, one of the biggest critiques of SAMS over the years, and yes, there's plenty of critics out there, and rightfully so, because we're a professional organization and we want to have professional discussions. But one of the things that we are criticized for is our inability of some of our graduates to depart here and properly apply what they've learned. They say that they arrive at our organization and they like to dream on acetate, they like to dream on whiteboards, but they just can't kick out a product. We failed, right? SAMS has a dud rate, right? And unfortunately, when those graduates leave and are unable to translate what they've learned and give a division commander what he or she needs to drive operations, we have failed. So, we are very cognizant of that fact of producing graduates who get things done, who can take complex problems, think through them, generate action, motivate others to think through problems and accomplish the mission and deliver a product. So we take that very seriously.
You're saying to quit dreaming on acetate.
Yes, please quit and yes, and do not sniff the markers.
Okay.
Yes, yeah.
No promises.
Yeah, that is a great question because, when you get about 10 and a half months or 10 and a half, 11 months to do this, every minute's precious, man. And, are you reading a book? Are you doing practice? Are we reviewing doctrine? Do I, give you an order to that you can work through to do a war game? How far along do we go in the MDMP all the way to op order production? Do we do a rehearsal? Do we do a simulation at the end so you can get some feedback and write fragos and those kind of things? So for each minute that you have, it's a choice, right? And, that choice is spread out all over the year. And I think from my perspective that I've seen over the years, it's always a struggle, right? Because then it gets into the debate, well, are you educating or training, right? And my answer is yes, we're doing both. Because the education is leading to the development of good training, and the training reinforces the discipline, that self-discipline to do the education piece. So that's sort of how I see it. But in terms of practice, it doesn't just end, right? So like we're doing an exercise, we'll end at a rehearsal or rock drill, so to speak, and then we'll do an AAR, and then you leave. Well, in a month from now, I suspect that you'll be going through MDMP, writing an op order, doing a rock drill, writing an order, and then executing, and then doing it again and again and again. All right. I think the most important piece is to understand that at some point that order is going to be written for execution, right? And at what level? And we always complain about higher headquarters orders, but I always come back with, well, a SAMS graduate probably wrote that order. Right, so it's only as good as what we produce, and I take that pretty seriously, right? So we can take credit for a lot of good things, but I think we have to also acknowledge that bad things that do happen, we have our hands in that also. So the gravity is pretty significant when you go out, because SAMS planners usually don't get to go out on the patrol after you issue that division order.
Unfortunately,
or
for all the fun is.
Right.
Yeah, gentlemen, you both said something that I really latched onto about, the lens of branches and experience as well as learning from others. I know in my time here, I've really appreciated the wide spectrum of experiences in the seminars with the field selects, our classmates that come from our allies and partners, as well as our joint services, and that ability to learn from others. Recently, this year, SAMS has had a big push to place operational planning teams, or OPTs, into short, problem-specific sets and groups, rapidly form, storm and norm, and present kind of a, not necessarily a solution, but a dialogue to a presented problem. And that has really helped to increase the knowledge about what SAMS can do, as well as starting that conversation about the school and gathering interest. That practice for me really cemented the ability of what the school here taught, being able to work through a problem set with people from different seminars, get different perspectives from what they've learned through the year, and then get feedback through dialogue and direction from senior leaders, cemented to me the value of what we learn here and the practical application of it. So how do you talk to people about bridging that cognitive approach and the operational artists themselves? Or do you guys have maybe a vignette for us about a time that you were able to approach a problem using the tools that SAMS gave you? Or in retrospect, a problem that you would have approached differently?
Well, I probably have a ton of vignettes where I applied that. I will say that I have used my SAMS education every day of my military career following my graduation from AMSP in 2006. I mean, it is every day because we're given these tools and hone these tools, you know, to apply them. I want to go back, though, and talk about, you know, I mean, Kelsey, you've had the privilege of going on an operational OPT. And I must say that those are tough decisions to allow our students to go do that because we're students still. All of you are still students. But operational headquarters are hungry, right, to get, you know, their hands on you because they're all really, really smart people that are going to do really, 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 really good when you get in the operational force. But they want to leverage that experience now. And we want to accommodate that, but we have to take a careful balance between completing, you know, the academic requirements that we're obligated to keep, vice, you know, letting you go out and have that operational experience and deal with real world problems, exactly like you did on a couple of occasions, because you're going to get that practical experience that everyone craves. So again, we're always balancing very closely, you know, how we do that, but overall, it's to our students' benefit. So we try and align it with an exercise period where you go get exercise credit while dealing with real-world problems. You know, I guess I've, you know, no direct vignette that I had to apply as a graduate, but because there's just been too many to count. But I will say one of my most transformative experiences of my entire AMSP year was when I was appointed to be the OPT lead when the School of Advanced Aerospace Studies came and directed or led our exercise. I forgot what exercise number it was, but we had Operation Anaconda redo. Dr. Stanley actually lived the actual Operation Anaconda, and we were here redoing it here in AMSP. But to be put on the X as a lead and the demands of that, of what that required to organize a team, to organize information, to organize your approach, I mean, it was incredibly stressful to do that. But it was through that fire of having those pressures put on me, helped transform me. You know, suddenly things started clicking on, things that I learned months previously. I had no idea what it meant at the time, but suddenly I'm like, oh, wow, here's a tool that I can use. And that's just happened time and again in my career.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I feel the same way. I mean, you just sort of do it naturally. After a while, you just do it, right? And but I do find that, you know, if faced with a new problem or an unfamiliar one, I try to take the step back and go, oh, okay, so what is the problem? What tools do I have? How do I start? What's the objective? What is it that we want to get? I try to deconstruct what are the rule sets that are out there that are either can give you an opportunity or that's constraining you, right, from what you're going to do. So I think many of the tools don't just have a military application specifically, right? So it's not all combat operations that you're going to do. You're going to be faced with all kinds of things, right? So how do you reorganize an organization? How do you reorganize a curriculum? How do you train the division up to be prepared and ready to go to do a warfighter exercise over an 8-9 month period? And you'll be a part of that. So it's not just doing the mission analysis brief. It may be a part of this overarching plan to get you to that point. And so, again, I don't know that there's one that particularly sticks out. Of course, you know, so, some of the combat ones do, obviously. And you always think back, did I go to bed too early? Did I not, you know, spend enough time and do enough detail? And, you know, am I going to wind up in a history book? And on which side of the argument am I going to wind up on the good side or the bad side?
You've both mentioned tools a lot. So, you know, Doctrine talks about the tools of the operational artist. We've mentioned a couple of them: culmination, operational reach, tempo, and how leaders over time develop an understanding of those tools and then see a problem in front of them, open up their rucksack and kind of pull out, you know, a hammer culmination and a crowbar operational reach. Or, and I'm reminded of one of the Sam's pre-readings, just, you know, you hate to mention the books we read, but Norman McLean's Young Men in Fire, right? It's like a book you read and you have no idea why you're reading it, right? Except for the fact you're like, oh, cool, fire, forest fire, right? These guys, they're airborne firefighters, no less, like some real raucous young men just jumping out of planes for the sake of being airborne because, you know, if you're not jumping, why be around?
And I've been told to read this.
Yeah, it's, but, and then you get like 7 months through the course and you realize that it's the allegory for Sam's. And what I find most interesting about that is, I'm kind of curious if I'm just crazy right now, just watching your eyes intently when I say this out loud. It's like you're giving us tools, and as you develop a cognition of operational art, you find these tools. But if in finding them, you realize so well that like you might need to drop all of them and just find brand new tools that are just – and I'm very curious about what that – I think of practice kind of like that. Like practice is knowing when to find new tools and when to use the tools you've been given through theory, doctrine, and history. Question mark.
Yeah, so I think that's really a good book to think about, right? And so there is a reason we have you do it as a pre-read. That's why on day one and day two we start mentioning it and we refer back to it over time. And it's not just about the tools. That's the one that keeps coming up about dropping your tools, right? But I think the other is, you know, what is the theory of the phenomena, right? And then what's your theory of action? And so dropping your tools is a recognition that the theory of the phenomena does not – the tools that you have can't fix that. And that's when you drop. And so your new theory of action is you have to either drop those tools and start running, right? And which direction do you run? And then what other tools do you have to help, you know, solve the problem? Is it – you know, building the backfire, who would have known, right? And that's the creativity, that's the imagination, that's the thinking back years ago of something that might have saved, you know, somebody else's life, something you just read about, right, or heard about. That's the experience, that's the intuition that's there. So those are the things that come into play when you think about Young Men in Fire. So, you know, those, you know, soon to be Sam's graduates, make sure you read that book before you come in as a pre-read. That's my one plug-in for one of the pre-reads. Do all the pre-readings, but that one importantly.
In this allegory, I do appreciate that the survival rate of the book is not good, but going forward, you guys are equipping us with the tools to get the teams out of this metaphorical fire. We've spent quite a few of our questions have been oriented on asking you guys about past experiences, but I'd like to ask a question about the future. You know, as you're adapting these tools, to continue the metaphor, how are you working to reorganize the curriculum and keep it adaptive to the needs of the Army as it continues to develop?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So I think the thing that we have to remind ourselves here at the school is as the world changes around us, as the mission sets change around us, as the mission sets that the Army and the Joint Force in general changes, that we have to be able to adjust along with them. And we have to be agile and adaptive also. So I think, number one, listening very closely to the higher headquarters. So, you know, when they say, hey, China's important, Indo-Pacific's important, you have to ask yourself, well, how many campaigns are we looking at in the Indo-Pacific, or how much are we looking at China or North Korea or anything in the Indo-Pacific? And then you ask yourselves those hard questions, because something's got to be dropped to add something, right? Or we just add more and you may or may not read it, or you may or may not pay attention. So I do think that We're fortunate that within the terminal learning objectives and the outcomes that we have, that we can make those adjustments pretty quickly, typically within from 1 year to the next. And if you think about it in a cycle, it's about every 5 years you really, really got to go back and take a hard look and say, what are you doing and how are you approaching this? And then making those choices as you go through. So hopefully, as you know, our esteemed Dr. Gorman has says, it's an evolution, not a revolution when you do it. So it's not so harsh, right? And it makes it tough that you're able to ease into those. And I think setting your outcomes and your terminal learning objectives in a way that you can make those adjustments to the interior part of your curriculum is important for you as you go ahead. So I would say that even from this year, it's going to make some adjustments for next year. Maybe it's just a reorganizing and the flow or the sequence, and you amplify in one area and maybe not so much in another area. Sir,
there are probably a couple of things there. First, though, the curriculum itself, as Dr. Stanley suggests, we do periodic reviews at in a timeline that makes sense to ensure that we're current and relevant. I would say that we're injecting currency in it, every day, because there are other institutions that use fictitious scenarios to drive exercises or practical exercises. We like to use the current. So within our seminar rooms, we'll use the war in Ukraine. We'll use, the Taiwan conflict. We'll use, other conflicts, across the world to help, interject in our discussions to keep things current. So even though our, overall curriculum stays, relatively constant, because I still recognize elements of it when I was an AMSP student, many of those things are enduring, but we need to stay, in the present. And then to get back at your thought about tools, we throw a lot at you. Right. Some of it is really, really good. And some of it can be really, really bad. I mean, just ask the people who fill out the end of course surveys. And I'm sure both of you fill out your end of course surveys. Right. But sometimes you need a pretty thick skin. Right. To read some of those comments. But all those comments are incredibly beneficial. And we make adjustments off that to make sure that we're reaching, our students, our student body. But at the same time, there are sometimes, and it doesn't happen, very often, is that we'll look at a student comment or, and it's, there's some trends, other people thought it too. And we have to stop and say, you know what, these students just can't see it right now. Because the tool that we've provided for them, they just can't see the utility now. But if they just hold on a minute, give it a few months, I bet you any amount of money, 1 month's base pay or greater, that they'll have their aha moment and say, ah, now I know. Kind of where it fits in, and they'll be able to use it. So there's a balance there, because when we read those comments and we have those thoughts, hey, just hold on a minute, it'll make sense. We can't be so arrogant as educators to think that we know it all. So we have to stop and critically reevaluate. Okay, what are we doing? Does this tool make sense anymore? And if it doesn't, we throw it away and we get another one, and we try that to see if that has better resonance with our students. So yeah, we're not going to give you all the best tools in the world, because not all of them are going to work for you. In many instances, at the individual level, you have to decide what works for you. And so we throw a lot at you. I mean, Young Men in Fire, that's canon, right? That's like Sam's canon. We'll be reading that for the next, as long as this institution exists, I'm sure, because it's that powerful of a writing, and it really applies to your experience.
We've done a good job bridging, I think, into a conversation where we'd like to give you guys an opportunity to talk about kind of the future of SAMS writ large. So Kelsey mentioned one of the new things that SAMS has done this year, which is support the operational force. We're currently on another new SAMS thing this year, which is kind of the strategic messaging, the podcast itself. I'll plug that we're looking forward to the pretty quick release of a Substack for SAMS for kind of short order essays. Another one of our students kind of stepping up and filling out some print publication gaps. What are some of the things other than that that SAMS has been doing to enhance the institution's capacity to impact the force past the return on the value of the students themselves?
Yeah, well, Josh, I mean, first I would say that I think SAMS from its inception has provided support to the operational force. I think we just may be highlighting it a little bit more. I mean, as an AMSP student, we created a team to support the planning for Hurricane Katrina. We developed an OPT and actually sent people down to Louisiana to assist, you know, General Honoré at the time, who put the request in to do that. And that wasn't a one-off. I mean, we've been doing that. But as I came in as a director, I assessed, you know, we have got to just demonstrate our relevance and have that understanding that, you know, we do support the operational army, you know, whether it be in TRADOC, FORSCOM, AFC, because we've supported all three of those, you know, commands, and certainly within, you know, TRADOC itself and many internal institutions. But we're, you know, in this relevance, it's part of our message is that, you know, learning doesn't stop. It's continuous. So it's really part, we call it the SAMS Roadshow, but it's really our continuing education program. And when we arrive at a unit, it's not just to have for us to share all our great ideas and say, look at all the wonderful things we're doing, and we're wearing our saffron robes here in this, you know, the epicenter of Army, you know, learning and educational environment. We're there to listen. And, you know, coming back from Army Sustainment University, you know, last week, we had a great event with them. You know, we really got to hear sustainers talking about what they're struggling with in the classroom of how they're approaching, you know, the problem of sustainment or, you know, of being able to wage a campaign in the Pacific or anywhere in the world. And then we take it back and we think about it. And we're going to incorporate some of the things they're working on to give back. So, yeah, so relevance has, you know, then has a couple of different features. We're also going out trying to connect with alumni because it's been happening, you know, indirectly or organically for a long time. The SAMS network is alive and well, and all of you will probably see it very soon after graduating here. You'll get a call from a classmate at some other headquarters that needs something in another part of the world, and you're going to provide it, and then vice versa. You're going to seek out help. It's happened every day just about. Since I left the institution, there's some query on the net. So there is a lot of merit in us energizing that network for life well beyond the Army. And we get that wherever we go. Our graduates are now, you know, DA civilians. They're, you know, in other government positions and non-government positions. But so that conversation is healthy for us, and establishing a network is healthy for us and all of you in order to propagate this institution, which provides value back to the Army.
And Dr. Stanley, you and I were just speaking last week about the SAMS application process and how that information would be, you know, hitting the MILPER here pretty soon. I expressed to you, you know, my concerns when I went through the application process as a basic branch officer considering a VTIP, a new mom. I hadn't been reading military history books. I'd been reading parenting books.
How dare you?
I know. Little did I know that whole brain child is systems one, systems two thinking
exactly.
By another name. Can you talk to us a little bit about what SAMS is looking for in their student body?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, it's probably not a short answer. One would like to think, well, if I do the following three things that I get in the door. Let me kind of go back and talk about it in general. So the general characteristics, and we're pretty public about this when we put this out on our slide show that we do, we're looking for stamina and resolve, right? We're looking for physical fitness, but it's really the whole fitness, right? Because we know what's going to happen when you get out on the backside of this, that it's going to be very, very stressful. It's going to be long days. And to really be healthy walking in and walking out of this place will help sustain that as you go through the work that you have to do. The other is balance. And what do we mean by that? We hear that word. It's thrown back and forth a lot of times, and it's sort of left open to you. You have to figure it out, right? And it's not being overly committed in one area or another, because if we look at this in the terms of what do we want, to get that experience and that creativity and that innovation, be interested in more than one thing, right? And what is that? We're looking for moral courage, right? And that's the, in my humble opinion, that's about having the moral courage to have candor, all right? And can you do that? And that's not being abrasive, but that's mixed with humility, right? So having the moral courage to say the things that need to be said, you know, in a way to convey the messages that you mean. We say this often, all right, and sometimes we have to remind ourselves of this as the School of Advanced Military Studies, that humility is important. And that's intellectual humility, that's personal humility, the humility to listen to others, to take that feedback, even though it may not be pleasant all the time. an intellectual curiosity, right? Am I curious, right? So you say that we were talking about this the other day, and we were chatting about, we asked the question, so what do you read? Right? It doesn't have to be, you know, every campaign that you know or historical campaign and you know a lot about military stuff. It's the intellectual curiosity to bridge out beyond that. And it's for and it's purposeful, right? And so it's not just reading for reading's sake. It's reading for being purposeful. So the things that you were talking about, it was within a context, right, of that time in your life, in your personal life, in your family's life, that you were reading those things. And so these are very, very important. But I would say at the end of the day, when we're looking at an applicant, particularly during the interview, I'm looking at really three things. Will you get along with everybody in the classroom? Because you're going to be stuck with 14 or 16 folks for about 10 and a half months. And can you get along with them? And if you can, that means you're probably going to be able to get along with an OPT of a very large, diverse size when you get out in the operational force. Can you take intellectual feedback? Right? I don't mean criticism. I mean just feedback without getting all upset and taking that in a way that demonstrates that humility that you're willing to learn, because the humility ties in with that intellectual curiosity that you want to be better. All right. And then I think the other is we have a promise to the operational force that we're going to produce student officers who have graduated from here that are competent and they're confident in what they can do. And we have, you know, our outcomes that we've, our expectations and outcomes. And we have made a promise to the leaders of our Army that when you walk out the door, that you're going to be able to do those things. And so we're looking at that. Are you willing to take this gift of 10 and a half months and work your way through it, and on the backside, capitalize on that? Because it does open up doors. I mean, it's really truly a gift as you come through here, sir.
I guess two points to echo with you, and then I'll just add one other. You know, certainly being curious is near the top of the list. Find ways to educate yourself. And that's important to see that. Just also talk about humility. Humility, as a sub bullet of that it almost needs to come across as you got to know when to speak up and you got to know when to shut up. So that's a key component of humility. But broader in terms of understanding, you know, what officers can do to prepare themselves, I think just look at the tenets or, you know, the pillars of what professional development is within our Army. You know, institutional, operational, and self. You know, so many are coming from CGSS, so you're in the institutional realm. Are you doing everything possible to prepare yourself? Are you doing all the readings? Are you doing the additional readings? Are you finding ways to engage in the classroom? So not just being in the classroom isn't good enough. We expect you to take to the next level. Operational. So, you know, you gain experience in the operational force. Are you seeking out those tough jobs? Are you looking for opportunities to put yourself in situations that you are not going to be comfortable with? Because that's going to promote growth. And then finally, in the self-development realm, you know, I think self-development, it's that pillar that separates an okay officer from a good officer from a great officer. So, you know, what are you doing on your own time to hone your own skills? And so as I sit down and do interviews, I look across those three pillars and say, is this officer, is he or she, you know, getting the very most out of they can for all the opportunities that the Army has given them? And then what opportunities are they creating for themselves?
Yeah, so just to kind of synthesize a couple things that we've talked about today, we were talking about the value of SAMS, kind of what's unique about this institution. We talked about how building practice comes from a synthesis between building practice and experience comes with the synthesis of a high value curricula, quality people, your peers to your left and your right, and top notch instructors, military and academia alike. And then pairing that with your dialogue here on what we're looking for, curiosity, humility, hungry to learn, the wisdom to know when to be humble and when to be have some moral courage through the pillars of professional development. I'm no longer Major Bedingfield. I'm Lieutenant Bedingfield, right? Just a grass-eating infantryman jumping out of airplanes, and I've never heard of SAMS before. Or I'm Captain Bedingfield, and I'm looking at going to ILE next year. Or I'm on my way to CGSC right now. Why SAMS? Why advanced military studies program?
Yeah, so that's a great question, right? It's a million-dollar question for you. And I'm going to describe it this way. So as a baby captain at the 25th Infantry Division, stuck on division staff, infantryman that should have been commanding a company, right? That's what we do. But no, you're going to be on division staff. And it was a while before you get to work your way down. And we went to a warfighter exercise, and I had really no clue what I was doing, making some acetate, you know, some drawings in acetate and making copies and, you know, typing on a computer. And during the middle of this warfighter, this one major happened to be briefing all the time, and all the generals and all the brigade commanders were always around this one major, around the map all the time. And I asked the question of my boss at the time. I said, who is that and what does he do? And he said, oh, he's a Jedi Knight. And I was like, what? And he says, he's a SAMS graduate. And that's why they listen to him. And I was like, a two-star general listening to a major? And he said, yes. And that was soon to be General Chuck Jacoby when he was Major Jacoby. And I thought at that moment, I want to be like him. I want to be in the game. So if you want to be in the game, and when we talk about being a part of your profession, then we invite you to come here, right? And let's get you ready to be in the game. I mean, this is your profession. If this is really, really what you want to do, then come join us. In 10 and a half months, we'll let you go out and be the Chuck Jacobys and all of those other folks that are out there doing this thing. We're proud of our graduates that are out doing really, really great things. And come join us. We're inviting you. We don't just have a welcome mat. We have an invitation to you.
Yeah, I would only add to that, if I was to phrase it in its most succinct way, is that if you're an officer that wants to improve your ability to contribute to the success of your organization and its people, then you want to come to SAMS. One of the things we tell our graduates and certainly in the application process is that one of the main things you'll do as a graduate of this institution is go to an organization and have to train, lead, educate an inexperienced staff. And we tell them when you arrive at your staff, you're not better than them. You're going to find people just as and a whole lot smarter than you. And the only thing that separates you from them is that they have not had the opportunity to attend this school and received this wonderful gift called time in order to develop a series of tools and the ability to practice and execute them. But since you've received this great privilege to attend a school like that, your job is now to teach them, right? You need to teach them and give them the tools so they can apply it, they can make the organization, they can make their fellow people better. And that's what it is to be an AMSP graduate, to be a true, humble, you know, servant leader of accomplishing a whole lot just by being someone who can teach others just as you have learned.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for sitting down with us today. Do you have any closing words for the audience? Maybe when those curious can expect the MILPER to drop with instructions on how and when to apply to SAMS.
Yep, MILPER will be out in July. Two separate groups for application process. Active Component Army is part one, and so you should find out by the beginning of October in that application process so you can be ahead of the AIM cycle. And then group two are all others, joint, COMPO 2 and 3, interagency, international students, and they generally tend to wrap up by the first week of December.
We wish you both the best of luck in oral comprehensive exam.
We've already discussed this. We're good.
We wish you both the best of luck in oral comprehensive exams.
Yep.
I
would only say just as a closing comment, this idea of application is absolutely critical to what we do. I guess my mantra has always been you're only as good as your last game. SAMS, we are constantly looking to see where we can improve, do things better, and just get better as an organization each and every day. And I would say that in war, the gods of war aren't going to grade you on your plans. They're going to grade you on your results. So we can fill you with theory, history, doctrine all day, but unless you can turn around that and create conditions to win or to gain a position of strategic advantage, we've kind of lost it. So that's what we're doing, and that's what we aim to do each and every day.
This has been an official publication of the School of Advanced Military Studies. The views and expressions heard here are those of the authors and do not reflect the official position or opinions of SAMS, the U.S. Army, or the U.S. government. Stay up to date on all things SAMS and the Operational Arch by following us on Twitter at US_SAMS. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to or follow the podcast. Additionally, if you have recommendations for an episode, send any proposals to operationalarch@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.